Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. And this week, you're going to hear from a guy, a buddy of mine, who I've been on some pretty crazy adventures with, and he's had some pretty crazy adventures himself. And if you're into like things like special ops, I think you're really going to enjoy this. And what draws men into Christ? So stay tuned. Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. We are so glad you're with us. Wow, it is getting warm out, Eric. The temperature is changing.
Finally.
Yeah. You riding your bike?
I am.
Like, how much are you doing now?
So I've got like 540 some miles on it.
So that's 40 more than last week.
Yep.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, I'm going to get there.
I got into this fitness thing that was through Muscle and Fitness magazine. I think it came out in like 1938. It was Joe Weider. Some of you guys that like exercise might remember that magazine. I used to read it as a kid. It's kind of fun because I got into this thing kind of as a joke. I think I might have mentioned this before, but the voting ends in like 3 days. You guys, you can go online. If my friend's on Facebook, I'd appreciate your vote. Don't worry about it. But it's kind of cool because there's like thousands of guys in this competition. And right now I'm currently in my group, and I don't know how many are in my group. I think like 500 or something. I'm up to sixth. So 3 more days. So we'll see if I make it to the next round.
Yeah, we need to push that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I could stick a link on the podcast when guys go in. You can find the link on there. I'll make sure you guys can see it. You know, it's just I was saying on the little trailer kind of kicking into today's episode about, you know, what are the things that draws men to Christ? You know, today's guest is a very close friend of mine. Involved with a lot of special ops type stuff. You'll hear about from him in just a minute. But it's so amazing that a lot of guys get drawn into sports. You know, we've talked about that before. They get drawn into military stuff. A lot of guys get drawn into, you know, exercise, fitness stuff. And for me, you know, I was the skinniest little runt you ever saw when I was growing up. And I just kind of decided after I found out I had diabetes a couple of years ago that I was kind of done with allowing life to kind of play me. It's like that, you know, adapt and overcome. I'm gonna do this thing. So you might go on the link. I'll put it on there just for fun. But if you want to go in and vote for me, and I'll make it into round two, I'll keep you posted. But now, Eric, you were did you go through the police academy when you were? What was it you were involved in?
Yep, I went to the police academy. Graduated number one of my class.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yep,
that's pretty awesome. Were there more than one of you in the class?
There were three of us.
That was a joke.
No, yeah, I got the academic achievement award. How funny
that's
it is! I
awesome
messed that up, but yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yep,
I get it. You got to show me some pictures sometime. I want to see. We'll have to like post something.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Well, hey, let's kind of get kicked into today. Today's guest, he's been on twice before, and if you remember the story about kind of getting caught in a gully washer in Colorado we got surrounded by water overnight, or me going blind and someone having to save my butt, this is the guy that was there that kind of did it both times. So without him, who knows? I might be washed up and walking around like, yeah, blind. But Roger Medley is our guest today, and so, hey, Roger, say hey to everybody.
Hey, how you doing?
And you are coming to us from...
We're building a house east of Monument, Colorado. So we're sort of between Colorado Springs and Denver, a little town called Peyton.
And if you guys are watching this on the video through YouTube instead of just listening through Spotify or whatever, you get to kind of see the background of his new home. And Roger, it looks amazing. We've been following it. Oh, look at this. It still says Merry Christmas.
Yeah, our son Jake, who's in the Navy now, he's the one that put that up when he came home on leave, and he can take it down, right? So we'll just wait till he comes and visits. He can take it down.
You just need to have one of those we've talked about like keeping our Christmas tree up year round, but when it gets to be like Valentine's Day, just put like Valentine's stuff on it. You know, the 4th of July, you know, hang little flags. But my wife wasn't having it. That's just me being lazy and not wanting to keep setting it up every Christmas. Ugh. There's nothing like unboxing all that junk in the garage every year and then having to put it all back. But anyhow, Raj, you and I, we've talked before. We go back to around, I think, January 2008. I think that was it. And we've had some adventures together. But, you know, Roger, when we would hunt together, we would kind of talk about like two things. We would talk, well, three things. We would talk about God, and we would talk about, you know, elk hunting, because Roger's an amazing caller. And the other thing we would talk about was men's ministry, because we both have a real passion for seeing guys, you know, not only come to Christ, but what happens after that. And so today we're going to get into some of that, because Roger is going to be rich with some of the ideas and things that he's been involved in, you know, in motivating men. Roger, this morning when we were talking, you said you kind of had to, it's tomorrow morning, your men's breakfast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, every Tuesday morning.
Yeah, tell the listeners, in the morning. How many guys you have coming to that?
Well, let me back up before we get into that. But a friend of mine who actually I mentioned to you earlier just passed away this morning. Years ago, I got to do the funeral of one of my best friends. And then here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to get to do another funeral of one of my best friends. And we'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But he's the one, this guy, Jim Cooley, is the guy that said, Roger, you need to come check out this men's group. It meets on Tuesday mornings at this one of the larger churches in Colorado Springs. And he's like, oh, there's 35 guys there. You'll get along with them. The guys like to hunt and fish and outdoor stuff. And I said, you know, all right, maybe one day I'll go. And I got right on it and went 3 years later.
Oh, yeah.
And there was at that point, there was probably about 70, 75 guys. And come to find out, an old friend of mine actually started this thing. Over the last 3 years, we've now grown. We're just up to over 400 guys every week.
That's nuts.
We serve breakfast. It's $5, except for the first-time visitors. It's absolutely amazing. You know, a good friend of mine that actually leads this thing, he says, you know, we've got six guys that will carry us after we die. Wouldn't it be awesome to have six guys that carry us before we die?
Wow. Yeah. Most of us don't even have one.
Right.
It's sad. You know, Roger, when it's been a number of years now since we had those conversations, you know, in the woods and the mountains out there. But one of the things that you and I had an opportunity to do was we were able to lead a couple of men's retreats together out there. And we would sit and we would talk about, you know, what is it that moves the hearts of men, like you're just saying, to get involved, you know, to show up and do something like this? Because, you know, I'm going to be speaking this Wednesday or Thursday in Des Moines, and then Saturday in Muncie, Indiana. And I had made a post about, you know, all you guys talking about you want a band of brothers, but you're not willing to do anything. You know, I'm asking you guys to come and show up, and let's talk about the things that are real, you know, in the hearts of men. And when you and I led these couple of retreats out there, it was kind of funny because we're used to, you know, being out in the woods, in the wilderness, and doing all of our, you know, outdoor stuff. And we have all the base layers and bivy sacks and sleeping bags and water filtration, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. But some of the guys coming, that's not their world. And so I think was it the first retreat we did? You know, some of the guys, you know, they had the heart. They wanted to be there. They drove, some of them drove 1,000, 1,200 miles to be there. But it was going to be rainy. It was going to be muddy. And it was going to be cold. And I'll never forget that first night. Didn't some of the guys, like, hike a mile and a half back out of the woods to get to their truck because they didn't have anything for the weather?
They did. Yeah, it was funny. The one guy that I think you're really hinting at, that was on the second trip.
But, well, there was two trips. The first one, the guys didn't have base layers. And we had to take them, like, I forget what town we went to. Was it Durango or?
No, you should remember the town because that was Pagosa Springs. Oh, that's where you ended up in the hospital.
That's right. I couldn't see it, so I don't know. Yeah, that was the whole blind trip. But yeah, those guys, so we had to go in and they were looking for base layers. And of all the things, you know, here we are, like, what month was that? Was it late June? It seems like it was.
Yeah, late June.
And, you know, in the mountains, when you're up, you know, at altitude, it can get pretty cold. And so they couldn't find base layers. It was kind of miserable. It was rainy and muddy. And then the next trip was the one where some of the guys drove all the way across the country. And then this one guy flew in and didn't have a rental car. He lands there and has no car. So I get this message from a guy that I knew that drove all the way. Well, no, he and his son. Let me think. How did they do this? Did they drive all the way? Do you remember if Glenn and his son, because they had a rent. I think maybe they had a rental car. And they had to go and pick him up to get him to where we were going to be doing it. But he didn't have a sleeping bag. He didn't have a jacket.
Yeah, this is a camping. What High Country Ministries, so highcountryministries.org is the website. That's the ministry, the 501c3 that we did those retreats under.
Yeah.
We still do them. And so this guy called and said, hey, I'm in Denver at the airport, but they have no rental cars. I'm thinking of getting an Uber. Now we're going, it's probably 150 miles from where Denver
actually
is. And like there's no self coverage. There's it's Colorado. There's nothing there. Right.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that called and said, yeah, hey, I don't have any of this stuff. And where can I pick up a sleeping bag and a tent? So his plan was to get all this stuff. I'll let you,
you know,
take
my hat's off to him. I mean, for showing up. I mean, he was, we had, remember the conversations? Did he have like a broken arm or something going on at the time? I remember seeing a cast or something, but he was, he comes to this thing in faith. I mean, total faith. He's showing up because it's like, I need to be in the company of men. I want to grow. I wasn't taught this stuff when I'm growing up. So yeah, at first you're kind of shaking your head going, you know, where's this guy from? Right. But the other side of it is, you know, this guy has got a destination in mind, and that's manhood. He wants to be able to learn what does it look like to be in the company of men, and he wanted to know God on a deeper level. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can just remember how cold. We had snow then, too.
We did. You know, one of the cool things is ultimately we saw God provide, right? There was a guy there, Jim Pierce, that had an RV with him, and he ended up probably staying in one of the better accommodations. Well,
yeah, you and I were sleeping in the back of like a what was that little trailer? Not like a travel trailer, but like a U-Haul,
a little box trailer.
Little box trailer, and we slept in that on cots. Yeah, that guy was in there with nice heated running water, bathroom, all this stuff. But you know, I was thinking too earlier before I came down to the studio today about, and I was talking earlier about fitness and training. You know, you live out there, you're at altitude, and I can remember you saying, you know, you're going to be sucking wind when you get here. And so for probably 90 to 100 days, I would be doing my cardio, you know, before I got there. I can remember texting you. I'd have my backpack on. I'd load it down. And it's, you know, you really do have to train to be in those kind of places. And that kid that came, that kind of began his training, you know, in knowing God through I don't know how else to say it, the lens of masculinity in a way that woke his heart up. Maybe not in the way that we see so much going on in the world now. I mean, everyone's talking about, you know, toxic masculinity, all this stuff. You know, those are more like insecurity issues. But when we think about, you know, God made them male and female, you know, in the very beginning, you know, how do we move men to know who they are in Christ? Because we need the men's strength now, you know, more than ever. And so, Roger, that's really a big part of why I wanted to get you back on here, because you're really involved, you know, in your men's breakfast and have been for years with working with the Hearts of Men. And in a little bit, I'll talk about what you're doing now with taking some guys into the mountains. So make sure we get back to that. So one of the things you said to me, Roger, and I'll let you kind of take it here, is one of the things you mentioned, you know, how do we get from here to there? You know, how do we get men you know, off the couch, you know, how do we get their voices to be heard where they're willing to, you know, go and make a difference. So it's kind of go time. You know, you and I talk about this all the time. We get frustrated. Yeah. Speaking to that. Are you there? Okay.
The really where my heart is I do see a lot of guys that'll accept Christ, and then you know, the funny saying is, and it's quite telling, is, you know, I'm the head of this house and my wife said I could say so, right? A lot of men just, they don't know how to be men. And, you know, a lot of the examples we have today are not real good. But really the bottom line is we've got to come to the end of ourselves. And I've got a couple stories I can share, one in particular about that. But if we don't come to the end of ourselves, meaning the validation that I need, if I give that up and understand that God's validation of me is enough, that is transformational. Not just life-changing, but it's transformational. Not just for me, but for my family and for those around me. You know, I liken a lot of what happens in the church today is kind of like going through, you know, I was Air Force. I got one son in the Navy, another son who was in the Army as a forward observer. And so I can relate real well to military illustrations. But it's like we go through basic training, and then we get some sort of specialized training, maybe. And then reality is we're supposed to, at some point, deploy. Go employ the skills that we've been given, whatever that mission is. But for most men, it's like they go through basic training, and I'll equate that to a Sunday morning, and then maybe a annual men's retreat, and that's it. And then they go back to, you know, just kind of being a bump on a pickle, and that's it. But when we can understand that there is more to this life, like an old friend of yours, to borrow the title of a song, More to This Life, from Stephen Curtis Chapman, when we realize that there really is more to this life that God has for us, it is transformational. But we first have to come to the end of ourselves. You're not going to die until God calls you home. Do not act like you're afraid to die. If you're more concerned about being careful and being, and I'm not talking about being reckless, don't hear what I'm not saying, but if you're all caught up in, well, I don't know, that sounds awful risky, I don't want to do that, maybe that'll hurt my reputation, or maybe that will, I need to save face, so I'm not going to stand against this moral issue. I don't want to make waves. Well, those are the men that on one level I get frustrated with, but on another level, my heart breaks for them. You know, you and I have learned to what we carry in the backcountry. If we can stay dry, we can stay warm. That's 95% of the battle, right? We can get rid of the other stuff. We don't need to carry that other stuff because it weighs us down. We're not agile, being able to move and do what we need to do. And the same goes for life. If we can lay aside those sins that easily trip us up and tangle us up, life is so much better.
And stay hydrated. Missed that one.
Yeah, right.
I've
stay hydrated. Yeah. And don't let the surgeon poke at your eyeball with rubber gloves on.
Yeah, that's another story.
It makes my eyes water just thinking about it.
Oh, my word. It's so good to be talking to somebody that I've shared life with. Really.
Yeah.
You know, you were telling me, Roger, about you and I talk about, like, one of the things that Roger and I will do is during the week we'll text each other. He'll say, "How's Brent? You know, how's Roger?" You know, we'll go back and forth. And I know that when he asks me that, he's not asking for me to say, "Oh, things are good. Yeah, we're doing good." He's really asking me, "How's Brent?" I mean, you know, off script, you know, off the mic, yeah. You know, how are you right now? And what's nice is, you know, I work from home, and so a lot of the time, Stacy's, you know, she's at work. The kid left at school. I can really talk honestly and just say, here's kind of what I'm struggling with right now. I could really use your prayer. And you do the same thing with me. And most of us don't have that. You said to me, we were talking this morning, not just because we have a podcast, we go back and forth and talk, but you mentioned about, because we were talking about like accountability and how that word can carry some weird connotations because it makes you feel like you're reporting to like a parole officer, and men get afraid of that word. But at the same time, men will tell you they like being held capable because there's something in that, that men are called to step up, and there's something in us that's made for that. You know, we love that, but it's got to be like in a, for lack of a better term, safe with the other brother that we've got. But we know that no matter what we say to each other, they're not pulling away. They still care about us, and they're going to be there no matter what. And that's one of the things I love about special ops. You know, in the intro to this, I talked about special ops, and you had an opportunity to work with, you know, quite a few special operators. But you said that you were, for lack of a better term, kind of an accountability group with a couple of guys. Was it, one was a Marine and one was it a SEAL?
Well, yeah, you, so just to paint the picture to the listeners, you know, I flew special ops. I was a flight engineer when I was on active duty, C-130 flight engineer. The one of the other guys was a retired Marine Corps fighter pilot. The third guy, there's three of us. The third guy was a retired Navy SEAL instructor. So you would think that the room would be filled with like all kinds of testosterone, right? That there was always the, you know, the Air Force is better, the Navy's better. You know, there's that banter that happens amongst family, right? If you're a civilian, you're not part of that family. You don't get to pick on us. But if you're part of the military family, then you do. But you would think that there would be a lot of chest pounding and, you know, I got more hair in my back than you do and, you know, that sort of thing. But frankly, there was absolutely none of that. The three of us were able to go deep, really, honestly, from day one, the first day that the three of us got together. And I attribute that to, we didn't have anything to prove, right? I didn't need their approval. I had no need to feel like, well, I've been through more than you guys because I stayed in longer than you did. There was none of that. There was no competition. And when you realize there's no competition, we kind of make competition up in our head, you know, like, oh, I'm worse than everybody else. You know, but all those guys, and I'm still very close to them, and we met almost 30 years ago, and we're still very close. We don't get, everybody's, you know, spread across the country, but we still get to meet with one another. But we could go deep very fast. I didn't need their approval. If I was struggling with something, I would say what it was, and they would say, okay, well, what are you doing to combat that, and how can we help? Their concern for me was not to get me to fess up to my deepest, darkest secret, but their deepest concern was to make me a better husband, to make me a better man, but more importantly, to make me more into the image of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and God doesn't keep beating us over the head with our past sin. He loves us. There's consequences we get, but God's already given us consequences. We know we don't have to try to, you know, dump that stuff on each other. So many times I get frustrated because I used to get these calls when I would do a lot of coaching and stuff. I would get these calls and they'd say, how can I get my husband to? How can I get my wife to? And it's the wrong question because you can't make anybody do anything. You create a safe environment. You learn how to ask questions the right way without an agenda. People will open up. Somehow inside of us, we know right and wrong. We do. God put that moral compass in us. And we just need to know that it's okay that if we have messed up, that you're not going to withdraw from me. We all need that. You said something else, too, about you said something about one of the things that in the military that you loved was you have to get past caring more about yourself than you do your brother. Touch on that. That was pretty big when you were telling me that.
You know, there's all kinds of movies that come to mind that really illustrate that. You know, Lone Survivor is one of those.
Oh, yeah. We just saw that the other night.
When you go through adversity, and adversity looks a lot of different ways, right? There's the combat, image of adversity. There's law enforcement, first responders that are going through a lot of adversity. But when you can walk with somebody, now you've got fellowship with someone else who's been there. Whether it was the same action, mission, whatever you want to call it, or if it was something similar, different time, different day, different place, you've got some commonality there. When you experience that level of, I don't want to call it intimacy because that sounds like, you know, all ooey gooey, you know, kind of stuff.
Okay, this is different than your wife. It's cool.
When you've got somebody that's been there with you,
yeah,
it is different. And when you come to the end of your life, in other words, you trying to preserve your own life at all kinds of expenses, when you can get to the place where, God, I'll do what you call me to do, because I'm not going home until you call me. Maybe that's today. Maybe that's 20 years from now. If that's no longer a ball and chain around your ankle, you will love others, put others ahead of yourself. Now, we do need to be careful there. Because of that verse, it tells us we need to love our neighbor as ourself, right? So that implies a bit of equality in our love and concern for ourselves compared to others.
Yeah.
However, putting the needs of others before our own is important. And if you can't get to that place, you can't have the six people to carry you before you die.
I mentioned just a minute ago that we were watching Lone Survivor. I've seen that movie a dozen times. I wanted my wife Stacy to see, because I had been talking about, you know, I need more contact with my brothers. You and I will reach out to each other. I've got a few other guys, you know, that I stay in contact with, but I need that time together. You know, as you refer to, like, that intimacy. I mean, it's one thing to message. We all know that texting and even phone calls, you know, you get to hear each other's voice. But there's something about time spent together when you're having to do real life together. I think that's one of the reasons why I've always felt close to you ever since, you know, our first hunting trip. Because, you know, we were up against the elements. Some things got thrown our way that we weren't expecting. We had to, you know, like as you would say, adapt and overcome and get out of there. And we ended up having a couple of those things. But my wife was like, she was amazed. Do you remember the one scene in there? I forget which one of the guys it was. I remember, what were the names? Because Marcus Luttrell was one of them. And then Axe, one of his buddies. But I forget which the other one was.
Danny Dietz.
Was he the one that was shot up and had to get on the rock? I can't remember which one. They had all been wounded.
Yeah.
But they couldn't get the cell signal. He couldn't get a signal out to have, you know, help come in. And he realizes he was in bad shape. And he's like, I'm saving my brothers. And so he made his way up onto this rock knowing he was going to get shot. And that's where he ended up losing his life. But he did it because he was calling in support for his brothers. And, man, I was watching that. She looked at me and she goes, why are you getting teared up? I said, because that's the way I want to be for my brothers, because I know my brothers would do that for me too. And it was something new, because most women, they have, you know, a different way of experiencing, you know, that kind of woman-to-woman relationship kind of a thing. But for men, in that way, they were doing battle together. And that's, when I think about men's ministry and I think about you, even though we're, you know, 1,200 miles apart or whatever it is, we go back and forth about, you know, what's happening in the ministry right now? What's happening in your own heart? What's happening in the hearts of these other men? What can we do to fan that flame? You mentioned some stories to me that were, if you can remember, because I can't, and I just want you to take these guys back. Maybe a lot, was it Euphrates? You were kind of telling me some stories.
Yeah, you know, you set yourself up there for a, since I'm younger than you, and you don't remember. But everybody listening is, I mean, they're tuned in to just really how old you are.
I know.
Before we did this particular mission, this was during Desert Storm. And for those that don't remember, you know, we spent months, U.S. and coalition forces, building up, I don't want to say just a huge presence, because that's really understating the amount of people and assets, machinery that was brought over there. We were staying at King Fahd Air Base, which is north of Dahran, Saudi Arabia. And I was talking to my daughter yesterday, and I counted up roughly 100 and over 6 weeks, because the air war started first, middle of January 1991. It was constant afterburner sound for 6 weeks of us blowing stuff up. Well, during that time, apparently the Iraqis didn't like being blown up, so they started trying to blow us up. And at my base alone, they shot roughly 135 Scud missiles at us. Averaged
about. Have the Patriot system then?
No, we did. Fortunately,
did we?
We did.
Well, maybe that was something that maybe some of us didn't know about yet.
Well, I at that point, I don't think everybody knew about it. And I don't know how much it had really truly been tested. You know, the Iron Dome over Israel is basically the same thing, as I understand it. But 135 missiles, basically three a night for a month and a half. And during one of those Scud missile attacks, and these missiles are about the size of a telephone pole, a little bigger. They're pretty big. And during one of those times is when God said, "Raj, you're going to be safe because I love you and people back home are praying for you." And after that, I had complete peace. Any sort of concerns I had about when I would die, how I would die, they were erased. Gone. Completely gone. Then a few nights later, the army, when they finally made the ground attack, started, the guys crossed over the line there, and they were heading up into the Euphrates out west, which is kind of where our focus was initially. The Marine Corps was focusing way out east, right along the coast and pushing into Kuwait City. It had been raining, and I'm telling you, you think desert and you think sand, it's like baby powder. It's not beach sand. When that stuff gets wet, it becomes sticky and it's nasty. So all the military vehicles that were carrying food and water for the Army guys got stuck in the mud. So we got called up, I think it was on night two of the ground attack, to go do an airdrop to some a bunch of Army guys right at the Euphrates River. And my dad taught me to fly, so I graduated high school with my commercial pilot's license and taught flying for a long time. And you know, a lot of C-130 time doing all kinds of missions all over the world. But that mission where we went to do that airdrop was probably the most dangerous, and that's based upon the intel briefs that we got before we left. But honestly, it was the most peaceful mission I ever flew, ever. Mm. Because God was with us. We were doing what we were called to do. Now, were we sitting ducks? And this is kind of the one of the dangerous parts about C-130 and doing airdrops is, you know, you slow down to 100, and it's been a few years, 135 knots, I think, all in a trail. You've got, I think in this particular formation, I was in the number two airplane. There was five airplanes, I think, doing airdrops. So we're all flying in a straight line, 50 feet above, you know, the airplane in front of you. You don't want to be in the last airplane because that gives everybody time to kind of zero in on you, right, and shoot you. But that's the mission we were called to do. And here's what I'm getting at with discipleship and getting men off of the couch. Yeah. We've got to do what we're called to do. And if you're not trained, get trained. If you've not been discipled, then get discipled. Don't just sit back and only pray. Because I know you have a passion for discipling men. I certainly do. So, you know, there's at least two or three of us right here that are absolutely passionate and willing to take on discipleship, even if it's, I don't want to make a commitment for you, but if somebody wants to call me and said, hey, would you disciple me? Sure, we'll do it over the phone, we'll do it over Zoom, whatever. I was listening to a podcast earlier today, and there was a, I don't know if this guy was a, I think he was a Green Beret maybe, and he was talking about being in combat is the most that he ever felt alive. And I thought about, well, why would that be? And I think the bottom line is you know what your mission is. You've got your directives. You've got your rules of engagement. When you can shoot, when you can do this action, when you can't. And you're with others, and you go when you do that thing. Now, how does that equate to our relationship with the Lord and the things he's called us to do? I think the difference is with, we can kind of pick on the SEALs for a little bit. Those guys know exactly what to do, right? They've trained. Their training and their exercises, you know, going through a mission, a practice mission, they do that so and under such strict in difficult circumstances that when you go to do the real thing, it's so much easier. But they know exactly what they need to do. Yeah. If they don't, they go get training. Now, as Christian men, if we don't know how to be Christian men, let's go get the training and let's hang out with the SEALs or the Special Ops or the Green Berets or the Delta guys that have done this before. And I can promise you, I can't tell you the number of students, flight engineers that I had. I never once looked at a student flight engineer less because, well, here I'm an evaluator and an instructor and I do all these other things, and well, not you. I never looked at them. My goal was to equip them as best as I could. When it comes to accountability groups or whatever you want to call them, frankly, that's where my heart's at. It's not about what you do or don't bring to the table. It really is, what can I do to better equip you to go out and be the warrior that God has called us to be? Psalm 144, I got it pulled up here. I don't want to mess up the verbiage here. It says, blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. We are called into a battle. Sometimes it's with ourselves. Sometimes it's with others. I can't imagine going and doing that airdrop by myself. nobody else on the airplane. I couldn't do it. We can't live this life. We're not meant to live this life alone. Yep. So really my hope is that your listeners would reach out to their pastor, say, "Pastor, I heard about this breakfast thing. Can we do something like that?" And let me just kind of jump on a bandwagon here for just a minute. And you and I both know, I've heard it many times, and I'm sure your listeners have too, and that is, if the senior pastor is not behind having a men's ministry at church, it will fail.
Yep.
Period. That's not an overstatement. It's a fact. And so, pastors, you've got an opportunity to do something here. One is to lead the men's ministry yourself. Don't get another guy to do it. You do it. The message to the men when you lead it is huge. Absolutely huge. If that's not your thing, if you can't do it, then I'll say get out of the way for somebody else too.
Yep.
I don't mean leave the pulpit. I don't mean you push this other guy to the front of the church and say, this is the leader. You let him speak on Sundays, Saturday nights. You give him the platform to be the one that they rally behind.
Yep, you get behind him. Absolutely. One of the things that used to frustrate me, and it still can, you know, because I'll speak for like these, not just men's conferences, which I do a number of those and leadership stuff, but even wild game dinners, you know, they put these events on because they're trying to draw the men in, and probably about 60% of the guys that come, as you know, because you speak for these too, and would never darken the door of a church. But here's what gets me so mad is some of these churches don't want to invite other churches. They'll put posters up, but they don't want to reach out to other men's groups, whether it's a conference or whatever, because they're afraid those men are going to start coming to their church now. Stop it. You lead. Yeah. You get out there. You invite these men. You invite these other churches saying, this is all about Jesus. This isn't about the name that's above the door of our church, our denomination, how much giving we're getting. You start leading and people are going to follow. You know, if you're 10 steps ahead of everybody, you're not leading. You've gone for a walk and no one, but you got to stay, you're in front of them, but you're leading them, which means you're having breakfast with them. You're on the phone with them. You're not shaming them. You're helping them walk through this stuff. There's not a man I know that hasn't made mistakes, insignificant mistakes. I wish I could remember the post that I made today, something about that. But leaders make mistakes and they learn and they grow from it. And that's who you're going to be able to get plugged in, because they've been there, done that, and they know where those pitfalls are. They know the encouragement that it took for them to get back on the horse and keep riding, because it takes that. It takes words of life. It says, you can do this. You absolutely have what it takes. Where are you feeling weak right now? Let's get in and pour into you and help you in that area. There's no competition here to be the leader. Every one of us men are called to be leaders, with our wives, with our kids, in our churches, in our communities. And when Roger and I started talking, and he says, man, what does it take? You know, it's kind of like the title was almost like, what does it take to get men off the couch? And what we're seeing happening, I can't go too much longer here, but what we're seeing happening in this nation right now, you know, I don't always go into stuff on this podcast because I've tried to kind of keep it with, let's stay focused on discipleship and training and adventure. But you almost can't not start looking at some of these things and going, guys, wake up. Look what's happening in our world. Look what's happening in our country. Look what's happening in our families right now. And if you don't lift your voice for what you know is right, you're setting your family up and generations to be totally messed up.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and speak into that.
Well, there's a couple things that come to my mind. One, concerning the, we don't want to lose any of our congregation. We don't want to lose any of our paying listeners is maybe an overly raw way to put it. But there's, I want to say, about 300, 350,000 people in Colorado Springs. At this breakfast, there's 135 churches represented.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So this is not 400 guys from the road, which is where I attend. It's not 400 guys from there. When you look at demographics and you know, if you've got 10 or 15% of your men from your church involved in like going on a men's retreat, that's probably decent numbers, right? 15, maybe even 20%.
Yeah.
But it's typically not much higher than that. And we don't view it as competition. This is a, Steve Holt is the senior pastor there, and I'm using his words now, which I try to not use somebody else's words, but a kingdom of God revolution. We want to bring God's rule and reign into our community. And that really is what we're trying to do. So if somebody wants to do the breakfast, we'll come in, we'll set you up with the stuff, we'll tell you how to do it. You know, everything from, you know, I'd be happy to go speak at other churches and do it, but I don't have to be there.
And I'll put your contact info in the thing for the podcast today too, is when guys log into it. Yeah. Raj, I want to touch on something before we wrap it up here. One of the things that I know you have a heart for is training leaders too. Guys that are out there leading, CEOs, different things that are leading these companies and men and organizations. And you started doing something. Would you tell me a little bit, or tell our listeners kind of what that is?
Sure. If you go to the website, highcountryministries.org, you won't find anything about it. But what it is, you know, I was a former COO myself, and which is kind of odd in many ways, because I'm not the guy to wear the fancy suit. You know, I got a t-shirt, blue jeans, and cowboy boots on, and that's me. And if I could wear that to the office, frankly, I would. But the COOs, the CEOs are driven, usually. They've got a plan. It's kind of like the entrepreneur in some ways, right? They've got a vision, and they'll do whatever it takes, and they'll leave whatever bodies along the road to get to where they need to get to, and that's not good. So what I started doing was taking executives, and it doesn't have to be an executive necessarily, but somebody that wants to get out where things are uncomfortable for them. So like the mile and a half hike in we did on the very first rugged retreat that we did together. And you know what? You got to go to the bathroom. Okay. You're going to take a dump over by the tree there. You're going to dig your little cat hole. You're going to do your thing. Water. Okay. We're going to walk down the stream. We're going to use a filter and we're going to get our own water. You won't have internet access. You won't have cell phone access. I have access to get messages back if that's needed, but you won't.
Right.
I want to get you to a place where you're out of your comfort zone so we can talk about, address whatever we need to talk about.
I think you said it to me, you want to help them become comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes back to our hunting experiences out here where it's rained, it's snowed, it's wind, it's, forest fires. Sadly, you and I have not experienced that, but that's a big deal out there.
Been into a place right after it happened. So yeah, I know that.
Yeah. But if we are not comfortable with the uncomfortable, then I would really say, and I'm going through a situation with 2.5 years of working on a house and looking for work. It's really coming to an end probably in the next 30 days.
Yeah. Pray for Roger, because he was telling me about this today, and Roger's highly skilled, but the market right now is so saturated with everybody. It's hard to find a job.
It's pretty lousy in that regard, but is God in charge of things that happen in my life? Do I trust him? And boy, that has been the biggest lesson here. Do I trust him? If I do trust him, and we're told to be anxious for nothing, if I'm anxious, and I'm not talking about someone with clinical depression, right, that has some chemicals, right, you know, they're I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the person that has gotten himself into a situation and they don't know if they can trust God. He is trustworthy.
Yep.
If you are anxious about something, then that really should highlight you to go back and look at, where am I not trusting him for his provision? He provides the worm, but I have to get out of the nest to get the worm. Right? So
yep.
He has his part. I have my part.
Yep.
But anyway, the bottom line is I want to see people changed.
You know, are we required to do something? Yeah. I mean, when water sits still, it becomes stagnant. Moving water is when growth happens, when life happens. And so, and none of us, we all find ourselves getting sad or depressed when we're not moving forward because we're not choosing to do something to grow. And so getting guys off the couch, pastors out there, whatever it is you need to be doing, like Roger was just talking about, you know, you lead, you get men who are leaders, you get them involved and get these guys moving. You'll begin to see the growth happen. That's what happens. So, and again, I'm going to wrap this up here, but Roger, they can go to highcountry.org, correct? To be able to reach out to you, High Country Ministries.
High Country Ministries with an S, .org.
Yeah.
Or just shoot me an email at roger@highcountryministries.org. Happy to help however I can.
You know, as we kind of wrap up here, I want to just say this. You know, we have our campaign going on as well with Unleashed. You know, God gave me a figure, and, you know, it's something that I kind of went, really, God? But here's the thing. I don't know why. You know, God put that figure out in front of me, and I told you guys what it was. For whatever reason, he said it's $40,000. I have no clue why. I don't know what that's for you, which sounds weird that I'm saying that. But I do know this. God does know why. You know, right now I'm creating a curriculum to go with what we do here at Unleashed. You know, Roger, we've taught this stuff in the mountains to men, and their lives have been changed. And, you know, I've just had a few men finally speak into my life and said, what are you doing with that stuff? Is it just in the books you've been writing? Or are you going to get something out there to help these men grow in their walk with Christ so they can go lead men? So, again, if you want to be able to support the ministry, you can go to Unleash Plus. You can get all kinds of extra stuff through there. I just uploaded 10 conversations I've had with some of the greatest whitetailers, if you're into hunting, that are out there. I just uploaded all those. But there's all kinds of stuff, discipleship, with these podcasts we're going through. So you can go to unleashed.men. And you can find the Unleashed Plus. You can become a member of that and get all the benefits and prizes and all kinds of stuff that we do every month. But the other thing, you'll see a donut or donut. You're going to see a donut. This is not Krispy Kreme. You're going to see a donate button. No, I don't eat donuts, so don't send me any. But there's a donate button. If you're looking for a 501c3 to be able to give to be able to support the ministry and get your tax credit, you absolutely can go through the unleashed.men and go to the donate page and we could use your
Freudian
help.
Slip. So.
What's that?
Freudian slip.
Yeah. Anyhow, you know, Roger. Frankly, go ahead.
Just real quick. I know we got to cut things off here, but for the pastor or the men's leader who's like, wow, this breakfast thing sounds cool. I don't know what to do. Take your book and go through your book with the guys.
Yeah.
It's easy.
If you're looking, there's two. There's Into the Wilds. There's The Roar Within. You can find them both on Amazon or whatever. There's questions in it that set you up with each chapter, too. So, and Roger, you endorsed one of those books. I remember that.
I think you did.
Love you, brother.
Love you, too.
All right, guys, get plugged in. Your strength is needed. Remember that we are the resistance, and we will see you next time.